Welcome. We're so prepared, and you know, we're professional. And today we have a very, very big show planned.
Very big show.
Because it's the
a very, very funny start.
Yeah, the art of the big show.
Yes.
Boy, when you start a show like that, how many times do you think a really big show that took years to plan starts out with a
really big
glitch?
Glitch.
Yeah.
I'm sure many.
But.
Many.
I think I looked over at Eric there, and he was thinking we were starting,
know,
and everything
and
was
we weren't
fine.
Talking, but he could hear. I was a bit. I'm sure it was weirder for him than it was for us.
Anyway,
So today's topic is about the big show, and or the art of the big show.
Yeah.
And it was inspired by the 40th anniversary of
Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty big show.
That was a big show. And a really good show, too.
Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't watch it. I heard all about it and in the pre-part, and then I heard reports after.
Oh, it was fantastic.
I don't have regular TV, I couldn't watch it.
Well, there's an app now. You can download every episode of Saturday Night Live ever made.
Oh, yeah. Well, there we go.
And you can download by artist.
Oh, okay. Well, now that's what I'll spend a weekend doing one day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So great Canadian talent, Mike Myers, Martin Short, Dan Aykroyd. It was such a good.
Yeah.
It was a really, really big show. I mean, legends were there. Eddie Murphy, Jerry Seinfeld, Larry David. Like, to be in that audience. And I guess they had a big party after. That must have been fun, too.
Oh, man. It would have been. Probably huge. Still going on.
And, you know, they're poking fun at themselves and poking fun at each other and poking fun at Sarah Palin was there. Jerry,
really?
Yeah. Jerry asked her to stand up and she had a question for Jerry. Oh, it was hilarious.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. See, that's not very American. That's very Canadian.
Yeah.
To poke fun at the politicians with the politicians right there.
No, they were right there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty. And Will Ferrell. I mean, it was so good. And then one of the takeaways for me was, you know, Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana, who got into so much trouble with her, whatever, twerking. She sang Paul Simon's 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover with the band. And do you remember the band G.E. Smith, the famous guitarist who played forever? Anyway, he was there. He was like the...
Is he like in Paul Simon's band?
No, he's actually the guitarist for the Saturday Night Live band.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he's a legend.
Okay.
Anyway, so Miley Cyrus sang or performed 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. It was outstanding.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. I'd forgotten because of all the controversy. She's a wonderful, talented singer. So,
Well, you know, even people who are super talented do crazy things in order to get noticed.
Yes, they do crazy things. That's right.
And
so they can get on the big show.
Well, yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of talent out there. So what do you do to make yourself stand out?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes what you choose to do is not the best thing, but it does make you stand out.
It does, definitely. Yeah. No, she was a standout for me. But, you know, and it just reminded me of like 40 years. A lot has happened in 40 years.
Yeah.
And Lorne Michaels, of course, is Canadian.
World.
And he's the producer of the show.
Yeah.
And Wayne's World, they redid a skit.
I would have really dug that.
Oh, it was so good. I'm sure you can
get
it on.
Well, that's an 80s kind of thing, too, right? Like, that was big. It was big when I was in high school.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there were years that were better than others, but, you know. And I guess the point is everything starts somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? And so maybe you're just working on a little thing, but... Someday it could be a big thing. Someday it could be Saturday Night Live, you know?
Well, like think of Roots and Blues, for instance. It started in a little hall, Glen Eden Hall, a weekend concert, a few concerts.
Indoor, couple bands.
Yeah. And within 10 years, it was outside, on the grounds, multiple stages. You know, that was, I mean, that's, but I always find that when I see things that start small and grow with their own power, those things have sustainability.
Exactly.
And they have an authenticity that kind of grows with them. It's
and the
not
experience,
like pretending
right?
something bigger than that it is.
It is.
So that's admirable, right? Like you see things like that grow and expand and you're like, yeah, that's totally, I mean, they're deserving of that because they've been thoughtful and they haven't tried to be too big all at once.
Right, and there's a big danger in that. So part of the idea behind a show called The Art of the Big Show is that you have to be strategic and you have to think long term and you have to start small and again you have to make mistakes and we have three particularly big things that happen or two big things that happen every summer in the Shuswap, and we're having another very, very big show this summer. So we thought we would talk about how those processes evolved and how they got to be what they are, and you know, lessons that we can learn for other big, big things, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Because everything big started small.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, so mm-hmm. this is going back for me about 2 years, that when I started talking about the show, that the Cardiff Miller exhibition that's yes. coming this summer.
This summer.
I remember when I finally was able to get, I mean, this is after 6 years of talks and pushing and planning and, you know, discussions. And then when I was finally able to get a signed contract, I remember thinking, oh, 2015 is so far away, because it was 3 years mm-hmm. at that point, right? It was 2012 when I got a signed contract to do this show. And I just thought, I don't even know, like, am I still going to be alive when this happens, right? Like, it just seemed so.
It took you six, so you started in 2006.
When they moved here, yes. Yeah, when Janet and George moved to Grindrod, and okay. we saw them at the one of the Runaway Moon events, open air.
Yes.
And we said, whoa, what are you guys doing here? Because Janet, of course, was one of my professors mm-hmm. at University of Lethbridge, and we knew them then. And they said, well, we just bought a little farm, and we're, you know, living part-time here now. And so right from that second, I went, yes. whoa, I wonder if maybe someday you I could get to them show. To show. And I don't know, you know, like they were really on a rocket ship to stardom mm-hmm. at that point, for sure. Cause they had already been, you know, I think it was in 98 that they represented Canada, the Venice Biennale. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they would have been like, yeah, sure. I'll just have a show at your little gallery.
In That's Saturn. Right.
So it was,
you had to work on it.
Yeah.
You had to
yeah.
work on them.
It was a yeah. long term process mm-hmm. to come to a place where, I think they felt, and I felt, and their studio manager felt like this is something that could really work here and mm-hmm. really benefit the community and have an impact that isn't so, like, you know, the stardom quality where it's like, oh, let's do this big thing, but nobody gets it, right? Nobody understands because
right.
there's no connection.
So like to still create an authentic experience for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you can't, like, even
for community artists who live in the community and show in the community.
Yeah.
Who happen to be superstars.
Yeah. And when people come else, to me, people come to me all the time with ideas for exhibitions.
Yes.
And they say, well, I know this guy, he's from South Africa and he does this and he's got the most amazing whatevers. And it sounds lovely, but I say the same thing because this is the honest truth. There has to be some connection to Salmon Arm mm-hmm. for it to work here. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people won't come.
No. Nope.
They just need to feel like there's something here, something in the gallery that actually is part of who they are
yes.
in order for them to walk through the doors. Mm-hmm. So with no connection, we have no show.
No. Nope.
So that was the big thing, right? Finding a nice big show that was exciting and contemporary and really showed that we have the abilities to do such things.
Yes.
But to still keep it connected to
yes.
here.
Yes. Yeah. It really took you from 2006 to 2012 to get a contract.
Yeah.
And then to wait 3 years. Well, 2015 is here now.
I know. And I'm still alive.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
That's right. And the big show is happening.
Yeah.
In July and August.
July, August, yeah. when we're seeing Experiment in F sharp minor.
Yes.
And that was the other thing, right? Like, it was a brand new piece at that point. Well, maybe it was, maybe like, yeah, whenever it was. Anyway, it was a brand new piece for them. And I had been after another piece that they had done in 2005, Opera yes. for a Small Room. And we saw that piece in their studio.
Opera for a Small Room.
Yeah. Yes. In their studio back, you know, when they were creating it for exhibition. And it was so powerful. I was blown away.
Yeah. You had your heart set on Opera for a Small Room.
Yeah. And my kids were so little. I was holding one of my kids in my arms and the other kid was in Eric's arms. And we looked inside this room that they had created with this person that didn't exist, moving around their room full of records and books and listening to overlapping soundtracks of opera and telling a story and then the train going by and the chandelier shaking. And my kids were just vibrating.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I knew that the piece had a musical connection yeah. here, right? Like, so many people love opera and sound and music yes. here. And the train being part of our life, you know, like that sort of sensation of the train rumbling through mm-hmm. and making things shake. And this, the fact that my kids really connected with it, I thought, this is going to work. This piece will be the
this
piece.
This is the piece.
And then it wasn't available.
Aww.
Yeah.
Because why? Because
well,
why? Why isn't it available? Well, do tell.
It wasn't at the time. And, and what happened was, is they can't make commitments for certain pieces because groups of their works end up going on tour. And they never exactly know which parts are actually going to be together on a tour. So a group of their works were going to go on tour in 2015 to Europe and then continue on to Asia in 2016. And opera was probably going to be part of that group. So we wouldn't be able to see it till like 2017 and back in 2012, 13. I'm like, no, I really want to make a plan here.
Yes.
And so, like I said, Experiment was brand new.
And Experiment was brand new in 2012.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it would have been, I'm just thinking, maybe it was early 2013 now that I think about it. Anyway, but it does have connection here because they created the piece. There's 72 speakers, 72 different sounds. Mm-hmm. Some of those are musical sounds that are created by musicians here in the Shuswap area. Some of those are voices recorded by people here. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's a connection here.
It's our sound. Well, if it was made here, right?
Yeah.
It was made here.
Yep. So it's very Shuswap.
Was opera made here?
I think parts of it were because it was in the first couple of years that they were living here.
And how many pieces do they have?
Oh, gosh.
Dozens? Hundreds? Dozens.
Dozens for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's probably, I don't know, 30 or so really well-known large-scale pieces, but lots and lots of smaller works. And lots of walks. Like, they've created walks where you actually go to a spot in London and you're wearing, you know, this is the days of the Walkman, and you're wearing your little Walkman. And,
oh, how cool would it be to have Carter and Miller do a walking tour?
Well, I know. Well, I sort of pitched that idea about 5 years ago. And
they're just too busy.
Well, and the cost of doing such a thing is enormous, right? The technical costs and the time, the investment. It's like, yeah, if we had $500,000, we could do a salmon arm special, right?
Wow. All right. Well, maybe I'll buy a lottery
ticket. Onward. What I wanted to really, that was a very long way of saying, this is a long planning process. Mm-hmm. This is not just, hey, guess what? We're going to throw up a piece that some artists down the street did. And then have an opening night, right?
No.
None of these things happen without lots of pre-planning.
Yeah. And sometimes the best planned events are the ones that look like they were the least work.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right?
Yeah.
It just kind of flows naturally and everything happens. And
yeah.
Right? So there really is an art to a big show.
There is.
And it involves a lot of time and a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An investment of money and time for sure. And you have to have the long view early on.
Yes. And some serious planning. Yeah. So maybe after the break, we can talk a little bit about how we're planning, have been planning, continue to plan so that show is a smooth, you know.
Yeah.
Looks like a piece of nothing work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or a piece of nothing job, but a great
just like figure
work.
Skating, right? They say that their job on the ice is to make it look as easy as possible.
Yes, as easy as possible. The big show.
How do you put on a really big show? It's very Ed Sullivan.
That's right. Ed Sullivan, that's his name. The name escaped me. We have a really, really big show.
That just reminds me of Karen Raven's comment after last week's show when we talked about our Canadian moment. She sent a picture of some RCMP members in their buffalo coats.
Yes,
and
I saw that.
Yeah, that was her Canadian moment, awesome. Seeing the RCMP on the street in Winnipeg, right, where it's colder than, you know what?
Yes.
And when they finally got to not have to wear them anymore, one of the comments from one of the officers was he felt like Ed Sullivan moving around in that thing because he had to move your head and neck all at the same time.
That's true. He did have that kind of, very stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can imagine RCMP trying to perform their duties in this gigantic, heavy winter buffalo
uniform.
Coat.
I know when I was in it at this, I know. Quick aside, I was in Italy once and the police officers have the most fantastic tailored uniforms with capes and leather and belts and buckles and beautiful shoes.
Is it just for show?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but we were there one day and staying in our room watching out the window and they were having this very animated discussion with someone who had parked in the wrong place and then ran off and then came back and I watched them and none of them would run and then it occurred to me like, here, hold my cape. I gotta go get this guy. Like, it's not practical.
No.
Chase after bad guys on cobblestone streets with, you know, men's brogues and a cape. That's why the mafia does so well.
Cops can't get them.
They're very stylish, but they're hard to, you know. Anyway, style is everywhere.
It is. It is. Yeah. Okay, so as we talk about planning for the big show, I just want to draw some
bad planning.
What? Bad planning for the cop uniform? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Good idea, badly executed. So, and that's what happens sometimes.
Yes.
Is you can have great ideas, great potential, and it cuts with a thud.
Exactly. It could fall flat because of bad planning. Mm-hmm. And this is why it's important to bring people onto your team that are good planners. Mm-hmm. Because there are idea people, and there are worker people, and there are planning people, and there are practical people. I mean, there's just, it's important to have a team.
Sure. And this sort of solo, one man, you know, me against the world, that doesn't work anymore.
No.
You need to build a team, a multifunctional team. Cardiff and Miller have engineers and, you know, we have people building rooms and we'll have sound engineers and we'll, you know, mm-hmm. it takes all kinds of people.
It sure does. Nobody can do it in isolation.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So the big show is also concurrent with a whole lot of other things going on. This is the thing that mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't recognize is that for us, exhibitions take a lot of planning in advance. Like last week I was working almost the whole week on the Trail Alliance exhibition mm-hmm. that we're having in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then we're also working on the 2017 Canada 150 exhibition year too.
So it's not linear. It's not like, well, let's do this and then we'll do that. I mean, everything is concurrent. It's all happening simultaneously.
Yeah. And we're starting the WOW sponsorship mm-hmm. letters for mm-hmm. this year's WOW concert series. And I'm working on the First Nations Artist Database. And we've got other exhibitions. Like next month, I've got Kathy Stubbington's show coming in the gallery in March. And then I've got Jeff Wilson, a Vancouver painter. And then I've got the Youth Exhibition, mm-hmm. which is a multimedia open show for kids aged 15 to 25. Then I've got Lynn Maxwell's solo exhibition, all before Cardiff Miller.
Yeah.
So it's the big show cannot take all of the time.
No.
Right? It's got to be just pieces and parts here and there. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to start three years ago.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You have to start 3 years ago. And again, bring outside people to the table, not just experts in the field, but so about a year, almost a year ago, mm-hmm. we started talking to community partners, the city of Salmon Arm, Economic Development, Shuswap Tourism, Downtown Salmon Arm, Salmon Arm Recreation. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, you know, it's just humility. You have to say, okay, we've never put anything on of this size mm-hmm. and scope. You got any suggestion, any advice, any pitfalls to avoid? And so if you take, say, Salmon Arm Recreation, they've hosted national tournaments, the women's national, men's under 18, big tournaments, junior curling, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So they have lessons to share, right? And so we need to learn from where do you put all the people, you know, how do you make all the schedules work? And even if it's not specific to what we're doing, there's still lessons mm-hmm. to be learned from people who are on the team who aren't necessarily in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we learned at that meeting is how hotels are sort of partnered.
We'll partner up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was beneficial. We could put a little package together mm-hmm. for people to utilize certain hotels, certain mm-hmm. restaurants, come to the show, and it's all part of a deal.
And in the wintertime tour, the biggest influx of people to the community is for hockey tournaments, mm-hmm. right? So everybody has a role to play in this. So this idea of being a silo onto yourself is not wise.
It isn't. And and so kind of going back to Roots and Blues, they're the same kind of thing. They take a full year to plan one mm-hmm. weekend event. Mm-hmm. And so certainly they can't just, you know, go online, book some bands and say, there, we got a festival.
No,
it's a huge team.
And it all huge team, all happens concurrently, right? Yeah. So they're working on marketing while they're working on strategy and they're putting in offers to get bands. Like it's, mm-hmm. and that's part of the, and I mean, I always tell my students, if you're a good manager, you can actually be a professional project manager, and that might not sound very glamorous, but it will help you work in very glamorous fields, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So they're dealing with the site, they're dealing with volunteers, they're dealing with sponsorship. All of these things happen concurrently. It takes a whole year. They have 4 full-time people. Mm-hmm. I think it's 4, might be 5, but 4. And then during the summer, the busier summer months, they have more full-time people.
Like 15 or something.
Yeah, and they have, you know, a six-figure budget, maybe almost seven figures. I don't know. When I was treasurer there, it was a $1.2 million budget.
Whew.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah.
For a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it isn't a weekend. It is.
You know, I get it. Yeah. Right? Like it's a full year. Mm-hmm. And then probably after they get their 24-hour break after the show, after the Roots and Blues is over, they instantly are planning for the next year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in fact, I think some of the planning starts prior to that.
Yeah. 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 So I do recognize that there's a huge economic impact year round because of planning for that event.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're employing people and you're, you know, dealing with sponsorships and hotels and you know, like all that kind of stuff, and you're buying equipment and tents and you know, things, there's
and renting and returning and installing and yeah, it's true. It gets more hectic at the end. But when you're at Roots and Blues, it's like, oh, isn't this clever of them to have said all this for the weekend?
Yeah.
It's really taken that long, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe before we get to the next break, we can just talk a little bit about this idea of partnering. So we're trying to partner with Roots and Blues and Caravan Farm Theater because we know that their audience is also the audience for Cardiff and Miller.
Yeah.
But then we started to think even bigger, right? So part of the art of the big show is thinking big too.
Yeah.
So Tracy and I said, we need to have everyone in the area needs to know about Cardiff and Miller, but we don't have an advertising
budget. It's so interesting because I've never...
Which is okay, because it's not always...
Well, I've never considered myself to have the skills necessary to determine what advertising would actually work for our industry.
Mm.
And there are definitely certain art sector, you know, genres that work in certain print media and absolutely, you know, like that works and they can justify the cost. But for this gallery and the Arts Council programs, I have not yet figured out what print material, like what cost material would work. And so far, community service news has been the best way of getting the information out there.
Yeah. I mean, from a marketing perspective, if money were no object, and it always is, but if it were no object, I would be buying ads, small weekly ads in every daily down the Pacific Northwest and in Western Canada in the travel section. That's what I would do.
Oh, yes.
Because those people match the demographic.
Right.
Curious, want to see something new, right?
Yeah.
But that would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Or
several times more than what the actual show will cost.
Yeah.
So it's not reasonable to do that. So the next challenge is, well, then how can we do this another way?
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people, so we've sort of taken the view that when it comes to a really big show, it's not our big show, it's everybody's big show.
It is.
So let's tell everybody. Mm-hmm. So last week we met with our MP, Colin Mays, who was here to reconnect in the constituency. I won't call it a break because
I know it's funny, hey, because he was pretty careful to say that this is not a break.
This is not a break.
I have so much to do.
Yeah. So when he's in the riding, he's far, far busier than when he's on the hill. Yeah. Just different kind of busy, I guess. Yeah. And he's very receptive and also he has access to everybody, literally everybody in the riding or every mailbox in the riding.
Mm-hmm.
He also has access to every MP in BC.
Yeah.
Right? Because they have regional caucuses.
Right.
So we tried that angle. And then we met with
Greg Kylo.
Greg Kylo.
He's a very nice fellow,
too. Who also has access to everybody in the riding.
Yeah.
And he also has access to all the MLAs in BC.
Yeah.
So, and everybody's really quite receptive.
Mm-hmm.
When you say Cardiff and Miller, kind of a big deal, and here's why, people get excited and they take ownership of it. And then they, you know. So today we're going to a marketing workshop after the show, hosted by Destination BC or?
I think it's TODA, isn't it?
Okay.
Like the Tourism Association.
I'm a bit confused. There's a lot of players on that.
I guess there's, it would be multi, see now, because of our multi-use generation, it would be a multi-sponsored event. Because nobody does things on their own anymore.
No, not anymore.
You have to partner.
No.
That's the only way to get things accomplished now. So, yeah, it's probably multi...
So let's say Shuswap Tourism, TODA, and Destinations BC.
Yeah.
So Destinations BC is the provincial mandated tourism promoter.
Okay.
Right? Would that be fair?
Sure.
And TODA, Thompson Okanagan.
So that's a regional.
Tourism Association is our regional tourism promoter.
Yeah.
And Shuswap is...
Yeah, well, it's us.
Shuswap Tourism is us.
Yeah.
It's Salmon Arm, Armstrong, Enderby. They've all... No, yeah. Not Armstrong.
Enderby. Probably just maybe as far as Enderby, but then Chase and North Shore. And I think all the way through Revelstoke area and stuff. Yeah.
It doesn't go as far as Revelstoke.
Oh, no?
No, okay. Revelstoke does their own thing.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So like up to Sicamouse, Eagle Valley
area. Yeah, and so everybody kind of pitches in.
Yeah.
It's quite effective use of... resources, I think.
And because they're collecting a lot of people together, boy, the opportunities when you actually connect real bodies is vast.
Yes, yes.
It's so much more effective to meet people face to face and to have 2 minutes of their time than it is to be sending emails or print ads or anything.
Right, because you need to look at them in the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's still the best way to get someone to go to something.
Yeah.
Hi, are you coming to my thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Diana does that because she does poster delivery for the gallery. And this is something she's been doing since she started there 6 years ago. She personally invites every person that she hands a poster to on her route. And there's 60 odd posters that go out every month.
Lovely.
Yeah. And I think that's a big relationship builder to say that you personally are important and we'd like to see you to come.
I hope we see you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the most effective, probably more effective than the poster.
Yeah.
Right? Is Diana.
Yeah.
We'll just send, we don't even need a poster.
No, we'll just send Diana around to invite everybody. Going,
by the way, this is your monthly reminder to come to the opening.
Yeah. And it's also like the outreach aspect of that. I don't like using the word outreach because it's kind of one of those blanket.
Networking.
Yeah. Ugh. But
I hate those made up words. And yet I'm the outreach coordinator.
I know. No, you're not. You're community development
coordinator. Community development. Oh, good.
Yeah, that's different.
Phew. Yeah. So we've been talking about the Cardiff Miller exhibit that's coming to the gallery in July and August. The Roots and Blues Festival, 23rd annual, third weekend in August. Mm-hmm. And Caravan Farm Theater.
Yeah.
Their summer show. Actually, their first spring show ever.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're now a four-season show organization.
And they're older than, they're the oldest of the bunch.
They are. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that little video? I think it's a National Film Board movie in the 60s. And you can see Richard Owings in there. And
it actually was a caravan, a moving caravan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just awesome. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty little lights and their decorations that they set up the little stage in the grass. Oh man, it was so adorable.
They're a national
treasure. I shouldn't say adorable. Mm-hmm. It was very amazing.
Yes.
Magical and wonderful. And it still is.
Yes.
It's magical to go to those outdoor experiences. Mm-hmm. But they're, so here they are.
And they're a really big show.
Yeah, that's a big show.
Like on a big stage.
Yeah, because this is, they're a professional theater. Mm-hmm. This is not like, let's draw from all of our volunteers to see who can, put together something.
No.
This is a professional company that has to pay professional fees.
Yeah, actors, guilds, and everything.
Yeah, and set designers and the whole nine yards, marketers, musicians, writing original music for production.
The horse people.
Yes.
Yes.
I know. That's the thing. It's like two things. It's a theater company and it's a farm trying to make it all work together, which is quite miraculous. But
what do you call the horse drivers?
The Teamsters.
The actual Teamsters.
Isn't
that's right.
Isn't that what they're called?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Teamsters. Yeah. And so they are highly skilled professionals.
Yes.
Sought after professionals.
Yeah.
Because those horses, they do choreography.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's almost like Cavalia.
Yeah. Something like that. I'm always like, how come they're not? Yeah. Because there's 16 horses per team or?
I think, four? It depends on it. The winter show is
two?
Pulling the sleigh. I think there's two, isn't there? Four? Two?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. See, I'm so busy just having fun looking at the theater.
They make it look so easy.
I know.
It totally looks organized.
Yeah.
Two horses.
And when they.
Six sleighs.
Right. There we go. Okay.
I was close. Six horses, two sleighs.
Yeah.
We're just really big sleighs.
That's what the big show does is make you forget about the details.
Yes.
And when they use a horse in actual productions, when the horse is on stage and stuff, that's quite magical too, because horses are not, they're, I was just about to say they're like people. Horses are like people. They have lines, they have places, they have things they have to do, and some things can rattle them, and they forget, and they have to be led and stuff, and so anything could go wrong.
Anything can go wrong.
But they're just always wonderful and amazing.
And that's the adrenaline, maybe, that anything can go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that's part of what makes Caravan, I guess, one of those very unique experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big show on a big property with a big history.
With big unknowns because of weather and,
and thunder, fog.
Yeah.
Thunderstorm, mud.
Yeah.
I hope it dries up a bit before the spring show.
Oh, yeah. And besides, because it's so hilly out there, there'll be water in some places and not in others.
Okay.
And,
all right.
You know, so it'll all be okay.
I mustn't worry.
Yeah. And you know what? I've always said when I... freaking out right towards the end of opening an exhibition or something, or talking to theater people, same thing, or people putting on a concert. Nobody in your audience knows what it was supposed to look like.
Yes. That's an important thing to remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't get a certain thing up on the wall that I expected to, or signage or the statement or whatever, and it doesn't happen until Saturday morning, nobody on Friday night says, hey, wait a minute.
Tracy, wasn't she supposed to put a sign up? True. I mean, it's like anything in life. It comes down to assumptions and expectations.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? So don't assume and be careful of your expectations.
Yeah, yeah. Manage your expectations.
Manage your expectations.
That's Dolores's big thing
right now. Oh, is that right?
Manage your expectations.
Yeah, and she is an expert at Caravan.
Yeah, she is.
Because she's been a dedicated volunteer board member forever.
Yeah.
So, and she helps us a lot at the gallery.
Yeah. And she's kind of.
And she'll pass along little bits of, okay, well, now at Caravan, this happened. So be mindful of or.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. She definitely has gems. And it's kind of funny because, you know, when you said earlier about how some things look like they do themselves, it creates itself and you don't have to do any work. Well, she's always the first one to say, oh, it's, you know, it's real lunch. Well, that takes care of itself. And it's, it takes care of
itself.
And
by itself, she means her.
Pretty much. Because what happens
is... cookies and the bread and the dishes and... Yeah.
Because the work, I think what she means by that is that we know what to do. Mm-hmm. That we're not going into the situation like, what are we doing now? And now what? And now this happened, now what? When these things, when she says it takes care of itself, it mostly means that we're prepared for unknowns because we've been down this route. She would say, this is not our first canoe trip. We've been down this road before. We know what to expect. If there's this problem, we've done this before. If there's that problem, we've done this. So that's, you know, those kinds of shows.
Not our first canoe trip.
Yeah.
All right. What is the typical expression? Not my first rodeo.
Yeah.
You've heard that. No, I'm going to replace that with not my first canoe trip.
Yeah.
Would technically be my first canoe. I think I did one once, so might not be there. Of course, I've done no rodeo. So. Yeah.
Well, I spent none my high school whatsoever. Years in Fairview, Alberta, so I've done rodeos.
You've done rodeos?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hmm. we won't go there.
No, we're not. That might be another show. Oh. But I think it's important to talk about, don't assume you're the expert either, right?
Yeah. I know, it's okay to ask for help.
Yes.
And to say, I don't know about this, and I don't know about that. Do you have any experience with that?
Yes.
It's important.
And we're so, I don't know, guarded and... God forbid someone should think I don't know what I'm talking about. If you just get that out in the open right away, people are much more likely to help you out.
I don't know why we're afraid of that. Why we're afraid of not looking like we know what we're doing.
We won't look like, I don't know, why?
I love being able to say, when somebody says, blah, 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 what's this, what's that? And I love being able to say, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I love it. Because if I don't know, that's way too much energy to try to make it up.
And so sometimes you... worry so much about looking foolish that you actually end up doing something foolish.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
It is. Which is one of the reasons why I really don't like listening to politicians speak normally, mm-hmm. especially the bigger, smarmy ones, is because I feel like that's what they're doing. Because they don't know the answer, so they're talking around it.
I know.
So that they don't appear that they don't know the answer.
They don't get that?
I know.
If someone just, the first guy, and let's face it, it's three guys that are in the running. The first guy to step up to the plate and say, you know what? I'm not perfect. I don't understand everything. Here's my sense of what happened and here's why I did what I did.
Yeah.
People go, oh. Right?
But then the other guys would tear that
apart. But they're being
apart.
Foolish by being afraid to look foolish.
Yeah. And I would love to be able to hear them say, I don't know how I would cope with that, but this is the kind of people that I've put together on a team that would help me cope with that.
Yes, yes, yes.
That would earn my respect.
Again, and I mean, a little bit it's the glacier thing, right? You only see the top.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on underneath. And that's part of the message of today's show is there's a lot going on underneath. So I guess my next comment would be leveled at those who might be critical of big shows. Well, I don't want to pay for that or how come this happened or how come that happened there? You know, we only know what we know. And chances are you know less than you think you know, right? And it happens at council too. People will bend my ear, blah, blah, blah. And I just, you know, sometimes there's other things.
Well, there's always other things. Nothing is in isolation.
No. So
there's always other factors. Mm-hmm. And we just have to remember, I think that there's no one person is ultimately responsible for any one thing. And we can't expect that of anyone. We can't expect anyone to justify or prove or, do you know what I mean? Like any one thing, because there's always a team.
Yes.
There's always the whole iceberg underneath
the water.
And
there's dynamics and there's process and there's personalities.
Yes.
And sometimes the personalities overcome process. Sometimes process overcomes personality. It's all about finding some balance and having like, a bit of personality, a bit of authenticity.
Yeah.
People have to want to work with you.
Yeah.
Right? And so we work hard at that at the Gal. We've been out, you know, pounding the pavement and knocking on doors and, hey, we want to talk to you about our thing, our big show.
Our big show.
Right?
Yeah. And it's like, it's not brand new to us. We've been doing this for 20 years.
No.
But this kind of thing is definitely the biggest thing we've ever done because these are internationally renowned artists.
It's true. It's the biggest thing we've ever done.
Yeah. So in a way, this has the potential to really ratchet us up a little bit.
Yes.
We've been pushed toward better standards because of a show like this.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working towards it for a few years anyway, just because we would have access to funding in like Canada Council and things like that if we had a more professional structure and paid artist fees and, you know, things like that. So mm-hmm. we've been kind of working towards that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But this kind of show kind of kicks you in the rear and says, okay, now we have to have this, we have to have that, have to have this. And then you build those relationships and you do those formal things and then the structure's there.
And your standards have just changed.
Yeah.
I have just, you know, you've upped the game a little bit.
Yeah.
Game on.
That's right.
There you go. And so these are the same thing with Caravan, you know? I don't know where I'm going with this thought.
Well,
other than that, it's this idea of constantly improving.
I know, because
continuous improvement.
Yeah, when I see a Caravan production that's really spectacular, I think, how are they ever going to outdo themselves? Like, everything else after this will seem like not as good. But then the next year, it's like, wow, how are they ever going to outdo themselves?
Yeah.
You know, because they do. They're innovative and they think about the changing world and they think about the changing population and they, you know, I mean, they being innovative with your programming to put on the big show
mm-hmm.
makes it so that every single time you do something, it seems like that's the best you've ever done.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the minute's over, you have to try and do better next time.
Be best again.
And I think part of that too is it's momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So Tracy and I have been talking a lot about momentum at the office and trying to get some more momentum for this thing. And part of momentum too is when you're good at it or you're a good planner and you're good at building momentum and you're good at building relationships is people start to take ownership of your thing, right? So if Cardiff and Miller is a huge hit, it's not going to be because of you or I or the team. It's going to be because people took the momentum and carried it.
Yeah.
Right? So Caravan, for example, when they have a great show, it's everybody's show.
Yeah.
Like, aren't we awesome?
Yeah.
We have this theater group, right? Or Roots and Blues, same thing. Aren't we great?
Yeah.
We got, like the Sam Roberts came or, or whoever, we're getting Powder Blues and that's going to be great. And so we tend to own what we think is successful. And then when it doesn't go so well, we're like, oh, those guys.
Those people.
I can't believe they did that. What were they thinking? Right?
What did you call that? There's a term for that. We talked about this like a year ago, and it was something like social. Okay, I'll think of it.
Oh, to privatize gains and socialize losses.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's
privatize gains
and socialize
losses.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that that's the directive.
Yeah.
That's the flip, because that's kind of the directive that comes from the top,
business
right?
world. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. In the corporate world, they say,
so we did awesome.
When
look
something
at all our
was
profits.
Awesome, yeah. Then they're like, look what we did. But when something doesn't do well, it's like, you guys, this really, this didn't work.
Too big to fail.
Yeah.
We need to level the playing field. I love that.
And you guys need to pay a little bit more taxes to help us deal with that.
Opposite, yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, corporations don't own roads and light standards. And, you know, I'd like to see them try to run a company if there were no roads to the building.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
But
or no bridges or no water treatment plants or no, right?
But it's interesting to note that it's the opposite to the way we feel as individuals.
Because the corporation is not a person. It doesn't have feelings.
No.
And I think we expect too much of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we really need to be talking to people in corporations, not corporations.
Right. The eye-to-eye contact, those very valuable minutes that you get to speak with somebody. And then speaking of speaking with somebody, one of the things we've done to reach out is to offer an artist talk that Janet and George are going to come and give in Salmon Arm.
Yes, we have to inform people.
Yes, May 21st is the date, Thursday, May 21st. We're not exactly sure where quite yet, we'll figure that out and get that information out there. And what a great opportunity to meet them and see what they're doing.
Well, I can tell you, if we were closer to Berlin, half of Berlin would be there for that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Is it true that they're very like rock stars in
Berlin? Oh, yeah. They have to like wear sunglasses.
Disguise themselves.
And they don't really go out very much because people stop them on the street.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Although people stop us on the street in Salmon Arm. Hey, Tracy.
Yeah, they stop me in Askies all the time. Yeah. So. Okay.
But not for our
those not because
reasons.
They just want to say how awesome I am. No, it's like, hey, you said you were going to send
that's
that thing
right.
to me.
Where's that email?
Okay. I think that we're supposed to take a break and see that there's some confab going on in the control room. So
what's confab?
Figuring stuff out together.
Oh.
That's what we do for the big show.
Confab.
We have confabs.
I've never heard it put
really?
That way. No.
Maybe that's a weird Western word that you're
could
not familiar
be.
With because
no.
you're an Eastern.
Yeah, like credenza or trivet. These are all words I didn't know
existed. You don't know trivet?
I didn't for a long time.
Oh.
I was like, what's a trivet?
Oh, okay. And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Speaking of the big show.
The big show. The biggest show.
Who do you think is the biggest artist? Like, not necessarily in sales, not necessarily in, just popularity, walking down the street with sunglasses on, but just best known works.
Most well-known artist of all time.
Yeah.
Kind of? Yeah.
Who do you think
MVP?
That would be?
Well, pretty clear to me. It would be Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
Not DiCaprio. Da Vinci.
Not DiCaprio.
And it's so sad when you type Leonardo in Google, DiCaprio comes up first. I'm like, that is wrong on so many levels. Internet, fix it.
Yeah, no kidding. That's entertainment value is to type one
not
word.
Not that I don't like him. I know.
Yeah. But in Google, type one word and see all the options that come up. It's totally entertaining. Yeah. I'm actually kind of silly that way.
I found that a bit, it sort of, my heart sunk a little bit, like, oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And then by a teen idol.
Who's not very teen idol anymore.
Not anymore. Like, no, he's very gifted, talented actor.
Yeah, yeah, but absolutely.
Not as gifted and not as talented as Leonardo da Vinci.
Right, right. So the Leonardo that we're referring to today was not actually a very prolific artist.
No.
In fact, he had multitudes of other careers. He was a brilliant inventor and
a mathematician.
Yes, and medical documentarian.
A scientist.
So he had a lot of other things going on.
Yes.
Which is why he didn't actually do very many paintings. Well, maybe not why he didn't do very many paintings, but he did hundreds and thousands of drawings.
Oh, sketches. So many
sketches.
Yeah.
But paintings, not so much.
No. They it was just one of his many talents, I guess.
Yeah. So he did only about 20 paintings. Only 15 have survived. So it's not exactly a big pool by which we can.
No. So they're very scarce.
They are very scarce.
Which is probably why the Mona Lisa in Paris is so... I mean, she is the most popular painting in the Louvre.
Yeah.
You could maybe argue that she's not the best painting.
Yeah.
But she's definitely the most popular.
Yeah. And maybe even the most well-known, right?
Yes.
Like on the planet in terms of knowing art.
Yeah. So I think number one would be the Mona Lisa. Venus de Milo is up there. The Wrath. Oh, no. Is it the Wrath of Medea? I can't remember. But there, I got two.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, because the Louvre is really old stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not so much into the old stuff. I'm more into the contemporary stuff.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I kind of...
And it's okay. It's, you know, not everybody digs the history.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's okay to just know enough that as much as you need to know.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, here's the dramatic moment.
Yes, okay.
The dramatic moment is that there is a second Mona Lisa. It's called the Isleworth Mona Lisa. And, okay, it's okay. It's not
a
like...
A second one. Is that the new? No, that's not new.
Well, it's not new. They've known about her for about 100 years.
Okay.
The problem is, of course, is that there are Leonardo experts mm-hmm. who have seen claims of Leonardo paintings and have done the detective work and then have basically said, no, it's not. It's not possible.
Not possible.
This one, though.
Please try again.
Yeah. So this one appears to be the same woman, except maybe 10 years earlier.
Okay.
So this is, her name was Lisa Gherardini, I think. And she was a merchant's wife.
Okay.
And it was a commissioned portrait, right?
Oh.
And Mona is just short for Madonna.
So it's like, will you take my wife's picture?
Yeah.
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 Which is what we would do now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was Madonna Lisa Gherardini that shortened to Mona Lisa.
Okay.
Anyway, so this Isleworth Mona Lisa looks like a younger version of this woman.
Wow.
And there's actually scholars now that have just announced that they are willing to stand behind it as an original Leonardo da Vinci.
So they'll make the determination that it's an original.
Yes, they have made the determination. Now, there are other experts. There are other Leonardo experts in the world.
Yeah, of course there are.
Martin Kemp is one of them. Saslow or something is another one. And they're not interested in this. Like, they're like, nope, not possible. One of the reasons is because this painting is done on canvas.
Okay.
And Leonardo traditionally did all of his work on wood.
Okay.
There is one other example of something he did on canvas, but it was definitely not his style to work on canvas. So that's one of them. But there's also all these other things. But there is some imaginings that through all of the analysis, because it's pretty amazing what we can do now for analysis of paint and fingerprints and hair and stuff, and that it's possible that he left the piece unfinished, that he did the portrait and not the background.
Oh.
And so somebody else did the background. And then, of course, you know, that's not really him anymore.
So it was a sketch. He didn't finish.
He drew
the portrait, but he didn't do the background.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he would have painted the portrait. Like, that's sort of the understanding of what might have happened here, because it's not, it cannot
so
be.
So could it be a collaboration then?
It could be.
Featuring the work of Leonardo da Vinci.
And many people, like after, because Mona Lisa was famous right away, right? Like it was a copied painting. Right away, like Raphael copied the bloody painting.
Is that right?
Eh? Yeah. So, you know, it's not as if there aren't a bunch out there.
Well, and I imagine if you're Leonardo da Vinci and you do a painting, you know, considering everything else you do, it probably is pretty popular pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think. And so now here's the thing. Now, nobody's, I don't know. It seems like things are often, what's the word for disauthenticated? Whatever it means to not authenticate.
Okay.
Way more often.
Unauthenticated?
Yeah, like proven to be not authentic.
We're skeptical, aren't we? Way more often
than something is proven. And it seems like it's not happened at all for many, many years.
Well, certainly easier to say no than to say yes.
Exactly, because what does it do to the whole sort of the structure of history and the market and everything else when you say yes it is, and then nobody wants to ever be proven wrong.
No.
And
again,
so if you've
you don't
said
want to look foolish.
Yeah, if you've said yes and then in 20 years there's new technology that says no, that guy didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
So it's easier to just say no.
Epic fail. No, I know.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing, if you're planning the big show, be prepared to say yes more often than you say
No. Because what really is the...
Can I help you with this? Yes.
Yeah.
Would you like to know more? Yes.
Yeah, right? I would. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Because there is really nothing... There's no harm in that. There's things to gain, not much to lose. The overall benefit is there. So say yes more than you say no.
Yes.
Okay, now here's my one final little thing about this dramatic moment.
Yes.
Just imagine if this was authenticated. So the guy's got 15 paintings on the planet. And if there's a 16th painting, we're talking like 1400s, right? 1470, something like that. Now imagine if this thing were to go on the auction block. Knowing that, just, I don't know, a couple weeks ago or something.
Well, assumptions and expectations.
I know.
Yeah,
a Gauguin just sold for $300 million.
Yeah.
A Gauguin.
$300
million. Yeah. And so imagine what this would be.
It's priceless.
It is. There would be no figure. There would be no private collector that would be.
So whatever you're paying for, you're just paying for access to it.
Yeah. It would be. It's
it
just,
can't be owned.
It's kind of. Does it just blow your mind?
It does. Yeah, it really does.
Because we're talking about value of something that really, it's just a cloth with some paint on it. But it because it's 500 and something.
Wow. Sometimes we're messed up human beings, aren't we?
We kind of are. Mm-hmm. We kind of don't put value in the right places.
Well, I'm
I
sure
think.
You for 300 million, you could feed a lot of. Kids.
I know.
You could feed a lot of villages.
Yes.
Yeah.
We certainly could. We could solve a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. We could put clean energy into a lot of communities.
But it's access to it.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Assumptions, expectations, and scarcity.
Mm-hmm. Goes back. Boy, we've had some awesome shows on this. On Heartscape.
Well, that's
we
scarcity
talked about
one I thought was
and
good.
Scarcity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Innovation and scarcity.
And what it does when you're mm-hmm. when you have scarce resources.
Well, and you know what? I think that's a great way to wrap this up. When you're putting on a big event at the big show, you know, even Ed Sullivan probably didn't have the budget he wanted, right?
Yeah.
And so producers would have to be innovative to get the acts, to get the guests, to come up with the skits that would, you know, hit a home run. And so if you're in for developing a big show, you're going to have to be innovative and you're going to have to recognize it. Just because you have a great idea, it's a little bit like Dragon's Den. People think, I have a great idea. And then they ask for $10 million with no equity in the... But they genuinely feel like the idea has value, mm-hmm. and that's great, except how we determine what value is doesn't always equate to money.
Yeah.
And sometimes the opposite, right?
Yeah.
So I know people will say, well, I need money for this because I have a great idea. Well, of course it's a great idea, but it doesn't necessarily mean the money's going to come right away or at all.
Yeah.
So, you know. Be innovative, plan ahead, take off little bites at a time.
And start small.
And ask for help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because starting small doesn't mean that you end up with a small thing.
No, no, no.
Start small in information. Start small in budget. Start mm-hmm. small in, you know, your planning.
Mm-hmm.
And let it grow naturally as you see the need for growth.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you will go big whole hog into one area of marketing, and it turns out that isn't even the thing that's going to work for you. But you've spent all that energy and time and maybe money. And now you've ignored the other thing all that time.
Yeah, so it has to be done in manageable, strategic chunks, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. I guess we could all do a better job of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's good to start with a small budget.
Mm-hmm.
I whenever I think about projects that are different than what we usually do, I start with the littlest budget I can possibly imagine
mm-hmm.
so that I think, well, how can I do this? How can we generate revenue from this? And if this is going to cost this, how can I get more?
Mm-hmm.
And it grows because I'm seeing the need
mm-hmm.
instead of saying, well, let's start with 10 grand and see what we can get.
Oh,
for
yeah, that's
it, you know?
A good way to waste a lot of money.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the only way to find out whether you can live without something is to live without it.
Yeah. True enough,
right? Ooh. So, we're down to 3 minutes.
Down to 3 minutes. Time for some local arts events.
Arts events.
Because it always comes down to that, to mm-hmm. what we do every day in our own community and how we have fun and how we celebrate and how we connect.
That's right. So Thursday, speaking of having fun, there'll be cookies at coffee break at the gallery.
Yep.
Right? So this is your chance to meet up with the artists of Game On.
Yeah. And do a walkabout.
Yes.
I love the walkabouts.
That sounds very Australian.
Yeah.
And then Shuswap Theater.
Shuswap Theater starts their production this coming weekend. It opens Friday night on the February 20th
mm-hmm.
and runs for 3 weekends.
Great.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then a matinee on Monday. That seems to work. That's a nice thing because people like to go to the theater on weekends.
Yes.
So it's nice that they've got added the third week
mm-hmm.
in the form of just the weekends.
And we have the film festival is this weekend.
Yep. The film festival opens Friday night as well.
So
and
do
it runs
come
for a week.
Yeah. Do come by for lunch.
And real lunch.
Gallery.
Real lunch on Saturday and Sunday.
11 to 1.
11:30 till 1.
Oh, sorry. 11:30 till 1.
Yeah. We've crammed that time down so many times. Like I think way back 15, 18 years ago, it was 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Oh, wow.
It was insane.
It's crazy.
Because nobody came for soup until 11:30, 12
You know what
o'clock.
I love about it? It reminds me of church dinners in the basement. Everybody just sits at long tables. People you know, people you don't know. There's a communal feel. It's really, I leave there with more energy than I arrive with.
Aww,
yeah,
that's so nice.
So even if you don't want to go to the movie, just come and have a bowl of soup.
Exactly. It's there for everybody. And it's both days.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really nice, and I think this is the biggest value, is the volunteers are lovely, dedicated volunteers who make soup for this event. Mm-hmm. They are the most creative cooks in the area. So they
good
make
cooks.
Yeah.
Some there's legends.
There is. There are some people that come just for, you know,
Dolores's chili.
Yeah, Dolores's chili.
and somebody's wedding soup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, I remember when Patrick Allwood used to make that Italian sausage soup with kale.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean there have been famed soups
that's right.
consumed. And of course the Blue Canoe gives us our bread and cookies. We we have locally roasted coffee. I mean it's a nice little event
all
where
around.
We celebrate the food.
Yeah.
Celebrate movies, soup and movies.
Theater art.
Yeah, pretty much everything. So watch us on Facebook for up-to-date information on the events coming up. But also you can check out the participate page on our website, www.salmonarmartcenter.ca. And everything's listed there by date.
That's right. And so, thank you for joining us on our big show, because this is a big show for us.
This kind of is a big show. Yeah. I mean, today we talked about big show on the big show.
Yeah.
That's like really crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we love being here and we love that you listen in. So have a great week and we'll talk to you again next week on Artscape.
Bye-bye.